Mr. David Robinson, director of the Giornate. How long, actually, have you been director now?
I have a very bad memory. I'm not sure if it's certainly 4 years, all the 4 years in Sicily, and I think there's at least 1 year in Pordenone, so it's minimum 5 years, but I'm not quite sure how many exactly.
Why are you so in love with silent movies and silent cinema?
Because they're forgotten. People are inclined to think of silent movies as just being an imperfect form of movies, and they all got better and got sound, and then they were finished. But it's not true. The silent movie had developed as an art in itself, and a very expressive, very fascinating art, and it deserves to be known. I enjoy it myself, and I want other people to enjoy it. I want other people to know about it. That there is still a great deal. It's not just something from the past. There's a great deal to be learned from it, to be enjoyed, and just like there is any other form of art which has a history.
Mm. In fact, people say, how come it's 20 years that you keep on showing silent movies? There was so much stuff to show, right?
Well, yes, every year people say, oh, well, how are you going to keep on finding stuff to show? And we have a list that, as long as I live, we shall never work through it. And I guess that by that time there will be a whole lot of more stuff. This is amazing when you think how was a really small proportion of the silent films that were made actually survive. I mean, it's reckoned that maybe generally in Europe, maybe somewhere between 25-30% of what was made still survives. But if you go to Japan, which had a very thriving film industry in the silent days, less than 1% of the films that were made still survive. And yes, we have some Hungarian films here, not Hungarian, but precisely, but Transylvanian films, and from the Hungarian production, which again was a very flourishing production. I think they made about 700 silent films. They were exported all over the world, and 95% of that has been lost. Very, very little survives. So actually, in looking at film history and writing film history, it's all a bit distorted by what is lost. You know, how can you take the Japanese cinema, which is a great cinema, had some, as we know, developed some extraordinary artists, but how can you judge it when not one in 100 films survives?
In fact, the Jean Mitry's prize this year is for a Japanese film historian that is very helpful in this case. He found actually new movies under his cinema, under his university this year.
Yes, this is Hiroshi Kumatsu, who's a great historian. I mean, we're rewarding him as a great historian, but he's been going to the Giornate as long as I have, which is since 1985, I think, has been a great help. But during those times, I mean, when he first came, he was still actually a student, but since then, now he teaches. He's a major teacher, but also a researcher, and many films have come to light because of his work. And I hope, actually, that that next year we'll have some more Japanese films, because they were a great revelation to people. Mm-hmm. And if there are Japanese films, Hiroshi knows where they're hidden.
Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about this year's program and these funny ladies. Was it you that decided to have this program?
I can't say it was I who decided, because it's a democratic festival, but I proposed it, actually. And I think that I did most of the programming. I did quite a bit of traveling looking for funny ladies. It is something rather special to me, because I love comedy. Not because I like to fall about laughing, I just think that often from comedy you can learn much, much more about a period than you can from films with more pretentious aims than just to make people laugh. I mean, I feel that the film which in many ways tells us most about the First World War is a comedy. It's Charlie Chaplin's Shoulder Arms. And certainly in looking at very many more funny ladies than we've got here, I realised the extent to which these films tell us about how women felt and thought and were thought about in the first 25 years of the century, which there were very significant years in women's lives, because women's roles changed very much. And all this is reflected in the films in a very amusing, often very, very charming way.
How are women different from men as comedians, in your opinion?
Well, I think that certainly in the very early days, anyway, because it was a visual medium, comedy tended to be physical, and when men are doing physical comedy, it tends to be rough. You know, they're always hitting each other, falling out of windows, and that was not really entirely in style for ladies, particularly in the very early days of the century, when they were maybe wearing long dresses. Well, you could make your own kind of jokes about the long dresses, but you couldn't. Ladies couldn't fall down on their bottoms or be kicked in their bottoms and things like that. And so the ladies were obliged to find rather different ways of comedy. And they were being pushed, I think, to be a little more sophisticated, a little more subtle often than the men. And some of them are exceedingly subtle. For me, a big surprise. One of the funniest of the funny ladies is Asta Nielsen, who was the first major international film star, and who is mostly known for high dramatic roles. And amazingly, she played Hamlet amongst other roles. Mm-hmm. And people forget that she also made comedy. I think proving that to play comedy well, the first thing is you've got to be a very good actress, and she was not a good actress, but she was a great actress. She was to my mind, she was one of the first people who really understood how to use the screen, you know, how to... most people in those early days came to the screen thinking, well, am I having my snapshot taken, or am I walking onto a stage? But somehow Asta Nielsen seemed to know exactly how to use the screen and where to be on the screen and how to communicate with the audience from the screen. And she uses this beautifully in the comedies, and she's very, very funny. But an enormous amount is done with just with the face.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about the other sections, the Switzerland and all the other sections, this music?
Well, I think that we started 3 years ago, I think, looking at the various national avant-gardes of the 20s, because almost every country had a little group of filmmakers who were quite aside from the regular commercial cinema and wanted to find ways of original ways of using films, generally ways which somehow linked to the other graphic arts. And this year it's Italy, the Italian avant-garde, and this proved rather a challenge. Carlo Montanaro arranged the season. It was a bit of a challenge because of course, the great avant-garde movement in the century was in Italy was futurism, and the futurists were very, very interested in films, and they talked about films in their manifesto, and they wrote a lot about films, and they made films. But unfortunately, practically nothing of what the artist did has survived. But Carlo explored the ways in which the makers of popular cinema, particularly the comedians, were actually exploring the medium in a very avant-garde way.
And other sections that this year's section, just briefly.
Yes. We always try to explore some silent cinema which is little known. I mean, our great moments were when we did the first major retrospective of the cinema of pre-revolutionary Russia, and then last year, I think the most extensive, not comprehensive because it's not possible, but the most extensive presentation of Japanese silent cinema. And this year we've come a little bit nearer home to do the silent cinema of Switzerland. I mean, people really, I think, forget that Switzerland had a cinema, but it's It's very interesting. It has its own themes, and for instance, the Swedish mythology of the mountains is explored in some of the films.
Mm.
What else? Working our way through the entire oeuvre of D.W. Griffith, who obviously was perhaps the most influential figure in early cinema, and amazingly little known. Partly, I think, partly for political reasons, in that his Birth of a Nation is a great, great film, but it is detested because of its very, very reactionary attitude to race and to black Americans. And I think that this has made even quite serious scholars keep away from Griffith. And certainly this is the first time that the hundreds and hundreds of short films that he made in his early years have been shown. We're trying to show them in a chronological order. An amazing number of them still survive. Very, very few are lost. And this year I think we have about something like 60 films that he made in the year 1912 alone. I mean, this is the extent of his activity.
Mm.
Well, they're not short films. I mean, they're 50, each one is 15 minutes. So this is an amazing output.
Mm.
Much more than one a week.
Mm. Now let's talk about another new thing, the Collegium. That's your idea, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah. And one of the reasons was that, this is what I heard, is that the public here in the Giornate is quite old. Is that right? So you wanted to have a few young...
No, it's not entitled to say they're old, but it is a very... It's a very cohesive, the same people come back again and again. Of course, if you've got the same group, of its very nature, it is every year. It's just, the average age is 1 year more.
Yeah.
And this worried me somewhat. And in any case, I felt that because I think silent films have a lot to offer in general, I wanted to share it with young people, and so I explored to see if, we could find young people who were interested. And yes, I mean, we do find many more than we can actually take. So that we serve a multiple purpose. I mean, we're lowering the average age, and we are introducing new people and new blood and new ideas into the community. It really is working. I mean, I look around with great satisfaction and see the people who have been coming over the past 4 years as part of the community. I mean, entering into it, not being different from others, talking to us. This is the main object that they... No, this is one object. The other was that I just realized we had these amazing facilities here. I mean, we have 70 hours of very rare film, which there's very little opportunity for anyone to see. We have that. We also have 600 or 700 of the world's top experts in this cinema, whether they're scholars, collectors, archivists, restorers, just enthusiasts. But here they are. Just the body of knowledge here is astounding, and it's just seemed a pity to bring it here and send it away again.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the other object of starting the Collegium, and we every year we invite 12 young people. I devise these funny names like Collegium Sacilensis just to show that it was not a convention. It was not a conventional summer school or course. The Collegium. I was amazed the other day when I said I call it the Collegium Sacilensis, and someone said, "Ah, yes, I know all about that." In fact, somewhere in the medieval times, there was a great ecclesiastical congress held here, and it was the Collegium Sacilensis. So I stole the name, and amazingly, somebody actually knew where it came from. And they have to see as many films as possible. Every day they lose their lunch. We give them sandwiches, but they lose their lunch time because we have what are called dialogues. Again, I invented a funny name. Well, it's a classical name. And the idea of these dialogues is that they meet a group of the experts in a particular field, and they chat and they get to know them. They're not scared of them. So during the course of the week, they have no hesitation about going to these people and say, look, I've got to write a paper. Please, can you help me? Because this is their other main obligation. At the end of the time, they have to write an essay on some subject which comes directly out of the collegium, whether it's from films or whether from people they've talked to. And this has worked amazingly well, because remember, these young people are not necessarily writers, but
not necessarily English.
No, not necessarily English. And I have to say that that this year's collegium papers are a little miscellany of film essays that anybody could read with the greatest satisfaction, and they're beautifully written. And I have to say that one of the two of them are very stylish English, but the most stylish of all is written by a native Romanian who just has that special mastery. He was very embarrassed. I said, well, you're obviously the Romanian Joseph Conrad, because if somebody writes a foreign language with mastery, I mean, they just have a way of using which is just so very strong, very refreshing. We had this, so I mean, that's that's something that gives me enormous satisfaction. I get a huge personal pleasure out of the collegium, maybe that's the best thing, because I hope I convey the pleasure and the enthusiasm, and that's I was talking to one of them this morning, saying, "Well, it works. I'm not quite sure how it works, but I think it is because what we offer is opportunity. Nothing else. We don't push information to them. We give them a big opportunity."
Mm-hmm. Now, just last question: can we have a few anticipations for next year's program, if there are any?
Yes, I think that I can come out and tell you. I'm pretty sure that we're going to have another collection of Japanese films, thanks to our Michi Prize winner, Mr. Komatsu. And interestingly enough, the collegium last year produced an amazing, very young English scholar of Japanese films, who is taking himself off to Japan to teach English and to learn Japanese, who is now working very closely with Mr. Komatsu. And I said, I think we've found a new, out of the collegium, we've found a new worker, a new collaborator for the Giornati. So anyway, so they will be providing us with Japan. And our central idea is something a bit different. Quite a lot of our guests have said to us, that it's rather a misleading, just show film after film after film is rather misleading. This is not how the films are seen. The films were seen in cinemas, in programs, and yes, you'd have a feature, but then you'd have a little comedy, a newsreel or something. And so our idea is to try to reproduce as accurately as we can a series of programs. I mean, maybe we'll take a program from Russia in 1913, from Japan in 1925, and take particular moments moments and places in history, and try to find out just what a film program at that moment looked like. We go from evidence like printed programs, which just tell us from what was shown. Obviously, we will not be able to find all the films that were shown in any program, but if it says, if it's a Max Landau comedy of 1913, well, if we haven't got that title, we know that if you put another title, it'll be the same length, it'll be the same spirit, and so it'd be a fairly accurate way of reproducing the program. Mm. Yeah, well, I think it'll be fun. I hope so.
Okay. Thank you very much.